This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, podcast people. What is up? This week is a doozy. We got the one and only DJ Premier. Now, if you don't already know who this guy is, he's half of hip-hop's gang star as well as a superstar producer for literally everyone in the biz. I'm talking Common, D'Angelo, Dre, Nas, KRS-One, Ludacris, M.O.P., Rakim, Snoop, Jay-Z. I said him already. Anyway, yo, he's also producer Christina Aguilera. I can't even say that girl's name. She's been around for 20 years. And on the pod, he talks about attending her wedding and learning how to appreciate wine. He also shares his philosophy on being one of the dopest producers in the business. So check it out, y'all. DJ Premier on Huey Off the Record. I think you got it. Thank you. Give me a test on the mic.
Yo. Check, two.
All right, we're here. What do you call this studio, man? I didn't
even ask this you. Is called Headquarters Studio, but it's spelled H-E-A-D-Q. Then C-O-U-R-T, like going to court, uh-huh. And then E-R-Z. It's in memory of my homie Headquarters, Kenneth Walker. He passed away, and when he passed, he passed in 2002. He was the type of dude that not was. He is the type of dude that just commanded attention, even if he wasn't commanding attention. And he's a one of a kind dude, man. And losing him was just such a big loss that he died right when D&D was closing. Mm-hmm. So now we couldn't even finish our last Gangstar album, The Owners, because we were probably 3 or 4 songs shy from finishing it, and D&D went out of business. So. Mm-hmm. That had me devastated because I've been there since 1992, and yeah. That's home, and, yeah. And all my great records that really blew me up come from D&D, you know, the bulk of it. And so from there, you know, I was not depressed where I'm, you know, can't function, but I was depressed, though, mm-hmm. Because not only that happened, Jam Master Jay died, and Headquarters died 2 days after him. So, and I knew Jay well, and then from there, when Headquarters passed, his mother asked me to dress him in the casket. She said, "I want you to pick out the outfit and make him." She said, "Make him look hip hop. Don't put him in a suit. Don't do anything, you know, formal. Make it the way he looked when he used to hang out with the fellas." I was like, "All right," got him dressed, and went out to the funeral home. The turnout was enormous. Tour buses are pulling up, yeah. MOP, and all of them are hopping off because they're about to go on tour. You know, big tour bus in front of a funeral home in the hood. Yeah. You know, and it was just so crazy packed. Something from Red Alert on. It just everybody knew Headquarters, you know, even from 50 Cent on down. So it was just a dope send off. And so when I approached the landlord about me taking over D&D, he was like, "Nah," he said, "well, unless you are speaking my language numbers wise." Yeah. He said, "I'm going to give you a post-it note and I'm going to write a number and you write a number." I wrote mine, pushed it to him. He wrote his, pushed it to me. He looked at it, he goes, "Oh, looks like your number doesn't match my number, so no business. I was like, "All right." I left. Went on tour for maybe almost a month. The day we're about to come back on tour on our bus, the landlord calls and shout to Mitch, and he goes, "Hey, you still want that place for that number that you slid on my desk?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "All right, come see me next week and we'll do a deal." And I did a 5-year deal, just for starters.
Yeah.
And everything was just super smooth the whole time. So I said, "Let's rename it. This D&D is really the legacy of Dave and Doug, who are D&D."
Yeah.
So shout out to Dave Lau and Doug Grammer. And so from there, I said, "Let's just rename it into our own name." And I was like, "Headquarters." And I said, "But we'll spell it. Can we just make fun of the way he spelled it? You know what I mean? That's not how you spell it." He, and he used to talk with it like a grit in his teeth. He'd be like, "Yeah, because I spell it that way because I'm flying and nobody liked me." Yeah. That's how he talked. Yeah, yeah. Even if he whispered to you.
He whispered like that.
"Hey, y'all could get a little something to drink at the fridge." And y'all be like, "Man, stop talking." And he was just hilarious, but also a stand-up dude on every level. So if you need him for war, he's ready for that, but he's also just a fun guy. They always say most guys, from, you know, killers to just the toughest dudes, are the most jokesters. You know what I'm saying?
They're not looking at you all mean and shit. All the nutty dudes who make the craziest jokes. You're like, "What is going on?" Yeah. Well, it's a great legacy. It's a wonderful place, man.
Yeah, so headquarters, I had it there from the time he passed all the way till We left here. We moved out New Year's Eve.
Wow.
Yeah, New Year's Eve.
So you get ready to go out that night and you just move.
Actually, January 3rd. But we it was symbolical because we're doing a documentary, so we documented the whole packing up and moving, everything. Showing us tearing everything down, pulling wood off the wall just to have a souvenir of a piece. And
what was Dave Lauer thinking about that?
Oh man, it was real emotional. And then we got all the artists that performed. I mean, that recorded there to do the documentary. Jay-Z did it. Nas did it.
Because everybody came through there, man.
Yeah, the whole boot camp clique. Because we were always there on a regular back then. Jay-Z was there on her all the time on his first two albums, Heavy. And the boot camp clique was always in one room. I was always in the other room. And, you know, Alchemist and Dilated Peoples, they would be in this new room they built called the D Room, which was a brand new room. Yeah. You know, it was an A, B, and D. No, there was no C. It was just crazy. I even brought the room. As years pass, there's a lot of gentrification going on over there in Hell's Kitchen area and everything, everywhere. And they sold the building twice. Those guys were cool. They were like, "Hey, we're the new guys that own the building. Keep on paying the rent."
So right.
Then here comes the guy that just doesn't care about legacy and all that and the history. He's either the man, of course, he's not going to stay if I, you know, just a super.
But that's neat. Yeah. I mean, also, like, D&D was, aside from being the legendary spot, it was also in Manhattan. There was Battery.
Yeah.
And there was Quad.
Hit Factory.
Yeah. There weren't that many that did hip hop music.
Yeah, but
I remember in, like, maybe the early 90s when you were coming around, there were a lot of studios that didn't. Like, the engineers wouldn't work out of there.
Yeah, Green Street was popping, too. Pete Rock made that really popping. Chung King was very
heavy. That was the one.
That was a big part of hip-hop. Def Jam, the Def Jam era. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was Chung King.
That was, like, I'm looking at your Akai over there. But that was, like, one of the things where, I mean, what was it? Adam Horowitz's drum machine was going around. Everybody's using
it. Oh, yeah. That from Ad Rock. That's crazy. Yeah, man. Yeah, I all of that hit us at the same time. Like, D&D's closing. I got to open it, and now we're selling the building. And you know, it was just like, where am I gonna go? I've been there for so long.
What made you think out here, man?
Oh, I rap in a shout to my man Brian Jaffe, man. He saw me at Toys R Us. I was buying something for my son.
The one uptown?
Yeah. No, in Queens.
Okay.
And he happened to be in the checkout line with his wife. And he sees me and is like, "Oh, man, DJ Premier," you know, that whole thing. Yeah. And I was looking for a commercial real estate broker, not residential.
Yeah.
And, you know, commercial, I never really had to do it because the place was already grandfathered. I was grandfathered in. So fast forward, he's in line. He's like just talking about, "Oh man, I know this and this and this song." And his wife's like, "You know, you're scaring him."
His son is starting to, like, you know,
she's like, "You're scaring the guy." Like, you know, because he's just going on that, and other people in line are going, "Who is that?"
Yeah.
"Oh, well, let me get a picture." You know, that thing.
And then you're trying to get out there with your kid, trying to buy some Lego.
Exactly. You know? So he says, "Can I get a picture?" I said, "Let's go outside and do it." As soon as we go outside, he goes, "Hey, by the way, if you need a commercial real estate lawyer, broker, I do that. And I was like, dude, I'm actually looking for property now to move my studio. Right. Told him the story. He's like, yo, let me do it for you. Called him. He took me to a whole bunch of dope places that it would always be something that just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And I want to say rest in peace to my man, Kirch. He's a construction guy that built City Field, and he knows how to build anything. He had the studio he built in his house, and it was just immaculate, and he's just really meticulous. The way this is standing, he'll be like, if you just look at it 10 seconds longer, you're going to get a better reception. Like, yeah, he's one of those type of guys. So he would go with me to every spot, spot to spot, you know, and he would be like, this place is cool, but it has asbestos properties.
Oh, yeah.
He said, even if you seal it up, it's going to leak through the power outlets, which I never knew that.
That's crazy. New York's full of that stuff.
Yeah,
man.
Asbestos can travel through the power outlets, and that's how it seeps into breathing it in. I never knew that.
That's crazy.
So then we go to another spot. This one's cool, but you're going to have to do this and this and this and this. I'm like, damn, but it'd be nice spots.
Yeah.
This one's cool, but such and such and such and such and such. And so maybe 2 weeks pass. And Kirch is a guy that'll, if you text him, he'll write a book back of text.
Oh, yeah.
Where's I'm like, with emojis and the whole thing. He had a drug problem for a long time, and he had just gotten out of rehab again. But he was on point. And then, boom, the day that they showed me this place, he came here, check this out. We started saying, if everything works out with the business, we'll stay here.
Mm-hmm.
The day we got the call that everything's good and we're gonna be able to move in, I called to give him the good news. He's not answering the phone, and he's the type that answers the phone no matter what.
Yeah.
And I'm calling him, he's not picking up. He died that morning in his sleep. Yeah. So crazy shit. It hurt because we were like, man, we're gonna do that back room and turn it into this.
Yeah.
And he was excited, and then boom.
Life's like that, though. It seems to me, as in my life anyway, I'm 49, right? When good things happen, when good things happen, there's also something bittersweet that happens.
Absolutely.
That teaches you that the good things happening are not just a good thing happening, but a seriously part of your life that you have to remember.
Yeah. And I can relate because, I mean, losing Guru, but even before losing Guru, I mean, losing all our peers that we were cool with. We hung out with ODB, we hung out with Pond, you know, not just meeting and saying, hey, it's cool to meet you. Like, we all hanging. And almost every rap artist from Pac on down were our friends, and they're gone. And then they made a big mark in hip hop. They weren't like
rappers like that
were
kind of
cool. On the underground, these guys were mega stars.
But the community was small back then too. Now it's worldwide, but it wasn't worldwide then. People kind of forget. They always think it kind of traveled in this huge, in this huge like kind of movement. But it was parochial. Like there was New York, and there was L.A. And we talked about this.
But we were friends with them too. We were already friends with Ice Cube. We were already friends with Dub C, MC8. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how we ended up doing an album that's out right now. It just dropped June 30th. Called Which Way Is West. It's just a project. I said, you don't know where to put it out. I said, let me hear the songs. I said, some of them need some touch-ups.
Yeah, it looks great to have you touch them up. Yeah.
And we dropped the album. It's doing well. And he's about to go, he's working on getting a tour together. And it's just dope how we can still do what we do the same way and make it to our audience, because our audience grows and we want to make music for our age. So we do that, and if the kids don't like it, it's cool, because our parents didn't like hip-hop.
Yeah, that's
either.
The thing, too. Like, I think when I first started listening to hip-hop, it was that older generation, like, what the hell is that? I mean, when you first started, playing around, people like, and now it's like this hip-hop that we love is like, I guess, legendary, absolutely, but legacy kind of audience, like, because people over 30 listen to music, actually still buy stuff, so it's a good thing to be where we are.
So I do it the way I've been doing it, and I stick to that way, and that way, leave the space open for the younger kids to do this shit. And we do ours. I don't have to make that style, to be relevant. I'm relevant to my audience already. I have a million followers, and to me, that's not scary, but if you know what I mean, it's scary that a million people will follow you. That's a lot to me. Some people I see 14 million, I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like,
nuts, though, but that's like a whole new, that's a whole new thing, because we remember before there was an internet, and it was just like the people you knew. the people who you knew, who knew you.
Yeah.
And that was kind of it. And then it turns in over the last, like, 25 years. There's this, this thing where, like, people like Katy Perry have, like, 65 million people.
She has a lot.
But that, you ever see that lady? I mean, I'm not going to say anything bad about her, but, like, she shaved her head and kind of pulled a little bit of a Britney kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, oh, I don't know who the real me is. It's like, yeah, because the whole thing is that I think with music, people esteem too easy now. They're like, all right, that's
pop kind of artists hard. Have a lot of pressure because when you go pop, obviously that's the biggest level of the music stardom, I guess you would say. You know, hip hop has its stars. You know, R&B and soul has its stars. I mean, Beyonce is still the biggest thing ever.
Yeah,
and that's but she's pop. I mean,
yeah. Well, essentially,
yeah. I mean,
sometimes pop can, you can make your own kind of pop.
Yeah, she makes, made her own. Yeah. Like she is one of the most greatest artists ever to know how to just keep reinventing. Like she got it down pat. I mean, obviously, she had the experience. That's the same thing with me. I was 19 when I went out to get my deal. By 21, I already had a deal. And I've been touring since then. So touring since 21, all I know is that world. It's all plane, turbulence. You know, everybody's screaming. That don't even bother me now. You know, like
people,
you know,
clapping the plane.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I've been through many a bumpy ones where everybody's going, oh! And
what kind of air miles do you have, man?
I got a lot.
It's like millions. Like, you can fly
everywhere. Shout out to Delta, man. Delta, we need to negotiate something, man, because...
Yo, Delta,
this is DJ Premier for Delta Airlines.
Delta has the best service. I've even heard people complain about Delta. We love Delta, man. Like, so far, I haven't had a problem with
them. Well, you've been doing it many, many years.
Yeah. Even when you call them with issues, if they're busy, they do call you back. Like, it automatically makes sure that your phone is called back. You ain't even got to do anything. Yeah, they call you back and say, yes.
I got to check them.
Yeah,
I do a lot of
just deal with you better. I've been with a jillion airlines, and they deal with you better. And again, recently somebody's like, man, fuck Delta. And I think Migos and them had a Delta problem, but I wasn't there.
Well, I saw something about that, yeah.
But I've never had a problem with them so far, and hope I don't. But they've always been on point with us, especially when we have problems with traveling overseas with our bags
and changing
just everything. Yeah, cancel flights. Yeah, they work it out with you, and they're not assholes on the phone. Nothing. Yeah. So until I have that problem, I fucks with Delta.
There it is. You know, there was a thing that we spoke about last time when it was pretty much how you originally started in Texas.
Yeah.
And you came to New York, and I guess the long story short is you came to New York to visit your
grandfather.
Mm-hmm. And your grandfather was a big jazz head.
Yeah.
And that's how you started listening to all these jazz records, right? Now, I'm going to ask, I have a couple questions that are relating to beats and things, right?
Okay.
And it's interesting because a friend of mine was like, well, what are you going to talk to Primo about? I was like, well, I mean, I do talk to him about, like, things, just general shit, like we talk about studios and Delta Airlines and whatnot. But, you know, a lot of times people kind of go, hey, man, let's see if we can get a couple like questions that are like that are like themed, and I always think a conversation are kind of better. But I was going to try this out because it's kind of interesting. So
do your thing.
Yeah, but check this out. So what was the first beat that made you think you want to do that when you started? You know,
that made me think that I want to do production.
Yeah.
I would probably say on the production side, I would have to say when I heard. Suck MCs from Run DMC.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was the one where you're like, I'm going to get some stuff
that
together.
That was like 84. So I was a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. So that was becoming the new thing to us because we didn't have rap when I was a kid. You know what I'm saying? It was just soul. It wasn't even R&B. It was soul music. You go to the record store, there's a rock section, jazz section, gospel section, soul section. There was no R&B section.
Yeah, I remember there was a moment, I guess it was like 83, 84 when all that stuff started coming out.
Yeah.
And the record stores would put it in the soul section.
Right.
And so you'd be like, you know, what was it,
But they had disco singles.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
okay. Yeah.
That's what it was. It didn't say 12-inch singles. No. Disco singles. Because a lot of the hot records, you know, I remember getting Aqua Boogie from Parliament, and, you know, the album version is probably like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and the 12-inch is 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, they got a 10-minute version. And then there was nothing on the other side that says one-sided It Casablanca Records used to always.
Well, I love that label.
One sided, this side only, and you know, I was still testing, throw the needle on, even though it goes and just slides across. Just it was like, wow, they have a one sided 12-inch. This is amazing. I thought that was so creative.
But that's kind of like how. I guess that's how a lot of DJs started getting into that stuff too. Like having a
one-sided.
Yeah, and also Casablanca Records—they had the best label, like the actual paper label. It was a Mirage. Yeah. No, it was what do they call that? Not a Mirage, but an Oasis. Yeah. It was like an Oasis with palm trees and shit. Yeah. I love it.
You know, and the fact they had Parliament on there was open. Donna Summer. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's what
Cameo,
I think.
And then they had the division of Casablanca. You know, it was Chocolate City Records. You know,
Records, man.
You know, so. Oh, just that whole era, man. Like that's why the whole hip hop thing, all that comes with me in how I create. All that comes with me. So, yeah, man. But I would say Suck MCs, Run DMC.
Now, were you DJing at that point when you heard that stuff?
Just at parties where I just knew the records. I was just watching Dre and on the Defiant one. Did you see that?
That's cool. Man.
I was doing the same thing. Yeah. Like he said, he knew what order to put them in, just so and stack them because we had the record. You could stack, I think, like 7 records, 10 for sure, but I think it was 7 or 8 you could stack 45s. You put the spindle look just like that, exactly that size, or you put the albums on there, and put on 33. But I did the same thing, put it in a certain order, so when the next one comes on, I was like, oh, damn, this is my jam. Oh, that's my jam. Oh, that's my jam. Oh, back to back. And I was the same way,
The party gets going.
But that's our job as a DJ anyway, is to control the situation, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's almost like a magician, you know, more waving a wand and making everybody float in the air at the same time. It's pretty much like that.
Yeah, and coming from you, when you first actually started getting with 2 records, like what was the first beat you sampled when you started making beats?
The first one I sampled when I started making beats, that was released.
Well,
Words I Manifest is really the first one that I actually did a record that I said, yo, this could be a record. I did demos shopping my demos, but you wouldn't know that beat anyway, so I couldn't even say, oh yeah, remember Up Another Level? You're gonna be like, no.
No, I never got released.
That was my demo. It was Up Another Level, We're Fantastic, and Let My DJ Get Hyped. Let My DJ Get Hyped ended up turning into DJ Premier and Deep Concentration.
Really? Because
every time my MC at that time, shout to Topski, my original MC, shout to Sugar Pop and Styly T, when Top says, you know, let me get off the mic and let my DJ get hyped. So all the scratches I did on there was my part that I was doing. And he come back with another verse, and then he said, let my DJ get hyped, do another part. And then when I did Deep Concentration on No More Mr. Nice Guy, I just combined all that as one long scratch off. Because every DJ had a scratch record on their album. So I was like, I got to do one too.
That one, I mean, I guess when you're doing it and you're in the mix, right, you're just kind of trying to get your thing off.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, you ever hear that the band Van Halen?
Of course. I went to Diver Down tour.
Yeah, I know you love that. I love Van Halen growing up. That was my shit. Yeah, he had the record Eruption, right? Remember that thing?
Oh, man, the solo,
So I think of that record like your record.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of like what it
goes
is. Like
right
this
into
is,
You Really Got Me.
Yeah, exactly, man.
I got to see David Lee Roth before he left and Sammy Hagar took over. So
I saw that. What was it? I saw the 1984 tour.
I saw, because I'm a Sammy fan, because our quarterback on my football team, he was a Sammy fan. He had a red Camaro. He had a red guitar. He
had that red pointy guitar.
To this day, when we drive, because his name is Brody Hoppers. Brody, he was a star quarterback back in when we were in high school for our football team. And whenever he'd drive, we used to all go to the mall together. Me, him, our fullback, Matthew Walker, who's my best friend since childhood. And then sometimes a guy named Matthew Woody would ride. It was always just different people, but we'd always go to the mall, and whenever he'd put on rock, he would drive and play the wheel. But to this day, when I drive, I do the same thing, because that was something that was normal from seeing Brody, because I'd always either be in the passenger or whatever, and he would do it to every record and finger the whole thing. So yeah, Brody, big up to him. But yeah, I'm a Van Halen junkie, man. Rush, AC/DC, The Smiths. I saw Genesis Live. Wow. These are all groups I witnessed perform in concert, you know. I saw Motley Crue open up for Ozzy, so they're way before
popped. That was back when they were all like, you know, little dudes and shit.
Yeah, this is before they popped. You know,
I guess being a great music maker, you have to listen to all types of music, right? That's the thing. When we start talking, you know, initially people say, "Oh, well, gangster, you know, there's a jazz influence. You must listen to jazz music." But you listen to freaking everything.
That's why I just did an interview the other day, and I was talking about how Hard to Earn was stripped down on purpose because they kept saying, you know, your premiere, you know, with the jazzy samples, with jazz rap. And we're like, jazz rap is like rapping about jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
This is, we're using jazz samples and making it sound like a hip hop beat, just using those sounds and we convert it. So
it was like a mine that you were mining rather than like a style that you were taking.
Right? Yeah, so with that, that's why I said, well, let's do Hard to Earn as stripped down as possible. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have melodic stuff like Mass Appeal. Mm-hmm. Not really too many. You know, everything was just raw. Like Brainstorm, which is one of my favorites ever. It's just a drum beat and scratches and him spitting fire. You know, and I just love the way it moves and the way he's flowing. And it's, and we always made battle records, like Guru would always say, "Yo, I just want this record to be about just we used to call them rhyming joints." So he'll say, "This was going to be about my ex girl. This was going to be about, you know, my relationship with my parents. This was going to be about a story joint. This was going to be for the club. This was going to spitting joint." But whenever he did just wanted just straight rhyme, he'll say, "Yo, we're doing rhyming joint." So that's why our records have a lot of you can't mess with me.
But he was like that in person, though. I mean, you know,
he's definitely different, man.
I remember I met him at Virgin Lounge it must have been JFK, right? Because he was going to England, right?
Right.
And he had a bracelet that was like this link, right? And he came up to me and he was like, "Yo, let me see your chain." I was like, "Oh shit!" "Well, man, what's you?" He was like, "Yeah, but let me see your chain."
Right.
You know, he was not having it. He wanted to see the chain. He was like, "Yeah, I know who I am, but I want to see your chain." I was like, "Wow!"
That's
but
cool.
It turned out we became friends from that. But it was interesting just to kind of like, that's how he was. So also with a lot of the stuff that you guys did, like, I mean, as a guy in a band that thinks about like different stuff, because we would say, like, all right, this is going to be the party joint, this is going to be the club joint, or whatever.
Yeah.
With that came a lot of the, I guess what I was saying, when you mine stuff, because it's like, if you listen to, even if you're taking a bass line, you chop that bass line up, and it's sounding like it's different notes. It's not the same phrasing. It's all
down.
So
yeah, my bass player just asked me, but that shout to Brady Watt, and he's in the band with me. He also plays for Talib Kweli, and then he has his own band, but when we put our band together, it's called the Batter Band, and we've been touring.
B-A-D-D-E-R.
and we've been having great tours, and we really kill it. And I'm a bass and drum guy, so he was like, "Yo, man, all those games." He was naming certain Gangstar songs. He goes, "Yo, what bass did you play on this one?" And I was like, "I didn't." He goes, "Well, I thought you played the bass." I said, "I did." He said, "Well, what bass did you use?" I said, "I was doing a keyboard." And he's like, "Dude, it sounds like your finger in a bass." I'm like, "Yeah, because my mind is like, play it like a bass player. Don't just, you know, and take the quantize off."
You're talking about Parliament. If you listen to their stuff, that's keyboard bass, but that's Bootsy playing a keyboard.
Yeah,
so it's like
Bernie Worrell.
Bernie.
Rest in peace, man. Bernie Worrell is one of the creators of just the funk on a whole nother level. Mm-hmm. When you hear that keyboard, you know it's Parliament, and you know which gave birth to the G funk sound and just the whole West Coast.
But he was a thoughtful guy too. He was on many levels at one time, like thinking, you know, on the harmony as well as thinking on the root. You know,
I'm a big George Clinton Parliament funkadelic. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely a funkateer. And then I'm a James Brown junkie. So.
See, James Brown, remember that the song that I guess Carlos Alomar wrote for David Bowie and James Brown at the same time is the Fame riff? I like James Brown version better.
Yes, obviously the Fame one, just the way he did it with the Fame.
Yeah. Well, that was John Lennon singing that.
Really?
Dude, this is the
background?
Yeah, that's John the songwriting credit is like Carlos Alomar, John Lennon, and David Bowie on that joint. And it's David Bowie going, "Fame, So if you right, look, right. It's John Lennon going fame. So if you look, next time you listen to it, you hear the high fame. That's John Lennon. Wow. You hear the, once you know it, you're like, oh shit, that is him.
Wow.
It's like the Mick Jagger thing on that Carly Simon song.
I gotta ask my tour manager. I gotta ask Keeler if he's aware of that because he's a Beatles.
Oh yeah, well that's
junkie.
These dudes. He did it at Electric Ladyland too, down on A Street.
Yeah, I did Devil's Pie at Electric Lady with D'Angelo, and we got a Grammy for it.
Yeah. How many Grammys do you have, man?
Three.
Yeah.
Jay-Z, Christina Aguilera, and D'Angelo.
Because we were talking about pop music, and I remember when you did that record with Christina.
Right.
And I think Becky was still working with you at the time. Mm-hmm. I was like, we were just like, that's how she should be sounding.
Yeah, man. I keep telling her let's do another one. Mm-hmm. We can kill it and with confidence. I hope we can still, crack into the scene. It's like, we could do it.
In the studio with you?
Yeah, she was cool. I flew down there and stayed with her for like a month.
Really?
And we had the most. She was getting married at the time too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we had so much fun, and I went to a wedding, and DJ AM, rest in peace, did a reception, and it was just a fun wedding. And then she had an after party after that, man.
After the party,
it was in Napa Valley, so now I have a lot of great friends in Napa Valley because I wasn't really hip to wine tasting. Oh, that man. Wasn't something I.
So that's where you spend an afternoon,
now,
man.
Oh, man, because shout out to Garrett Onfeld, man. He's the one that that's from there, and they were catering the food for Christina for her dinner the night before the wedding. And so he saw me walking around with whiskey, and he said, man, why don't you drink some wine? I'm like, man, that's
just chicks. I don't know. Drink this liquor right here. I'm drinking my annual liquor.
And he's like, dude, this is our livelihood. This is what this town is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, why don't you let me take you wine tasting tomorrow? And I was like, he convinced me to go. And then once I saw the culture and how they do it, and if you don't like it, pour it in the vase, I was like, oh, I like it. This is cool.
And also, you do get a minimum buzz out of it. You come out of it kind of feeling nice.
Nah, it's a trip. So now I have a whole different respect for the wine culture, period. And I got great friends out there to this day that I hang with when I go out there. And I've had even Brian, the one that got to help me get the studio to move here. He was going to Napa, and I hooked him up with my guys.
Oh, yeah?
And since they're born and raised there, they took care of him, took him to like the nice big mansions to relax and drink and just be all over in the mountains away from everybody, and just
it's a nice spot.
Took them to the wineries and to see where they make it. And he sent me a picture with my boy and all that stuff, and he was just like, man, my wife are so happy. And we had they took care of us, food, everything, and that was dope. So all because of Christina, because it would never have happened to connect with them.
I'd like to see that another record with you guys. That would be great, man.
Oh, hell yeah. She's working on one that I gave her, and she told me to send some more, so I'm gonna work on some new demos. But yeah, she has one that she wants to keep that I gave her a few years ago, so it's been almost 3 years. But she's the type at the point now, she can do it whenever she wants to start.
That's true.
She doesn't have to put out an album just
She doesn't need to rush anything.
So she said, I asked her just recently, does she still want it? She said, yeah, I'm keeping it. So she said, but send some more, but I'm definitely going to still mess with that one.
Yeah, she can't give it back, man. You can't give that back.
I don't want her to give it back. I want her to get on it and rock it. So yeah, we should be good. And shout out to her and the whole team.
Now, I was gonna keep going with my boy T-Bone's kind of idea of like, what was the last beat you made and things like that. But I wanted to kind of talk about when you make beats, it's obvious kind of to musicians, right, where you're going to be making all types of different kind of stuff. And I guess where you become the producer is where you go, well, like for instance, like that would be a joint that maybe Christina, I'll send to Christina. Now when you after you make the beat, do you kind of at that point think about who would be best suited to?
I don't make beats at all until I know there's a job.
Yeah.
Like, I don't just come in the studio and say, oh, let me make like 10 beats today.
See, I heard that about you, because that's how I kind of do stuff.
Never. And I walk in and make it right there while you wait. It's like, you're at McDonald's, yes, what would you like? I'd like a Big Mac, okay. Well, actually the Big Mac's already done. They're done, so I take that back. You make an order at a restaurant, nice restaurant where you get quality food. I make it right there. You can ask from any artist that's worked with me that was in the session, watch me turn it on and do it from scratch. I've never said, hey, here's a stack and pick one.
Yeah.
Never. Not to cut you. I have a couple that have been set aside, or somebody turned it down, and I'll use it for something else, and it'll pop off for somebody else. Yeah. But that's just because they happen to be there, and I would know, like, yo, I think you might rock to this, and they'll hear it and go, yeah, I'll take that. That's what happened with D'Angelo. That was a cannabis beat. Cannabis didn't want it. D'Angelo happened to call me that same day.
So he was still fresh
while I was leaving the lab. Oh, yeah, right, like, yeah. Literally leaving. He's like, yo, what you doing? I was like, no, I'm heading home. Yes, I was working on a beat with Biss, and he's not using it. He said, oh, well, can I hear it? And I was like, yeah. He said, my electric lady. I went to electric. That's where actually the picture of us at that session is mine.
Well, y'all can maybe hear Primo just turned on the mission control, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we were actually in the background, the wonderful movie, The Bronx Tale.
The Bronx Tale, man. Word. You could always watch that. But the picture is me, Jay Dilla, a young alchemist, and D'Angelo. And this is when D'Angelo said, yo, I'm about to do a video buck naked.
Oh, yeah. I remember I knew the dude who was his manager back then.
Yeah, Dominic. Yeah, Dominic. Yeah, he just passed away.
Yeah.
R.I.P., man.
Yeah, for a bit, for real. And I remember him saying, yeah, we shot a video, it's next level. And I was like, because D was on the same label as us on EMI back when we first got signed. So it was like, we were like, always interested in what he was doing, because Bob Power did some stuff with him, right?
Maybe on the mastering. Maybe he did on the, even, you know, Bob could play like guitar and stuff like that too. But so I don't know.
I don't know if he played,
but he's known for engineering.
Yeah, yeah. Because Tim Latham, who's the guy who worked with us, worked with Bob, and that's how we kind of got in that.
Okay.
But I remember anything D'Angelo
did
doing,
all the tribe stuff too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, man. And they do some De La things. But what I thought was funny was, like, he was just saying, yeah, he was almost kind of like, yeah, man, when this comes out, man. Oh, man, dude.
J Dilla before he was sick.
Wow. Look at Al.
Al was really young.
Al looks like 16, man.
Yeah, he might have been. He might have been.
Wow.
He might have been.
That's a great picture, man.
Yeah, and that's the engineer Dragon in the back. You know, he was engineer. He still is D'Angelo's engineer. But, yeah, that was D going over there to bring the beat. And that's actually the second day because
Your PNB Nation shirt, man.
Yeah. And Dilla was laying some stuff, and Questlove, it just is not in the shot. Questlove was literally walking out the door because he had just laid the title.
Oh, really?
The drums. Wow. So, yeah, man. But we were all in there just bugging out, having a good time, man.
So when we're just getting back to the beat making thing, right? I mean, it's also like I've also heard you say that it's not like a formula. Like, you just, that's what you do, is you vibe off the person you're going to be working with,
and I make what I think sounds like them. Sometimes they're like, nah, Preem, and I'm like, it is.
And then sometimes, you know, you want to know better.
Yeah.
You know, with Dilla, for instance, right? When you guys first started hanging out together, was it an instant kind of like, I like what you do, what you do kind of thing?
Yeah, I met him through Q-Tip.
And Q-Tip's, people don't realize that Q-Tip's a pretty badass producer as well, man.
He did The World Is Yours for Nas. I mean, not The World Is Yours, that's P-Rock. He did One Love, and you know, all the Tribe stuff. I mean, come on, like, before Dilla even came into the picture, like, he did Check the Rhyme, and Midnight, a war tour. I mean, Lyrics to Go.
So this, the Tribe discography is ridiculous.
Wow, man! You know, he DJs. You know,
he lost a lot of records back in.
We all gave him records. Yeah, we all made sure we gave him some stuff. So
that happened. I was talking to Ronson. He was like, "Oh, it's like he's not, because you're talking about getting depressed." I mean, that's a thing that, like, you know, you have friends leave, and then, like, your records. Yeah, if you have like as many as he did, or any DJ really. I remember Becky was telling me
my stories. I have a lot, man. Yeah. It's like, fuck, man.
Well, Becky was telling me that you used to travel with, what, like 6 crates?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
Think of the excess freight, man.
Thinking when they get lost and on a connecting flight, and they don't show up, and you're in Europe. You're like, where's my bag?
Someone in Dusseldorf's like, what is this? Yeah. What's inside?
Oh, records. I'm going to keep these.
Oh, man.
Or they used to be like, ah, it's just records. Get them out of here.
So yeah. I really like the idea of it being an organic situation with you, with the making of the rhymes.
Yeah,
thing.
It's always the only way. That's the only way I know how.
Yeah,
you know, I just come in. You want to work with such and such? Yeah, I'm down.
Stay tuned and stay classy. There's even more dope stuff coming your way. Mm-hmm.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, it was, but so we were just talking, my wife showed up with the kids and whatnot.
Yeah, shout out to Becky, man. for those that don't know, she's one of the dopest agents I ever had in the music business for my career. Everything was always just so dope how she dealt with us. All the money was great. The venues were great. Like, she always got us good gigs. And I just got to shout out Jazzy Jeff, DJ Jazzy Jeff, because he's the one that hooked me up with Becky. And then we started running together doing tours. And then Becky got out of the business and left it alone. Then we asked her to come back. She came back. We started rocking again. And now she's a mother of two and she's lamping.
Yeah, so. she's totally happy to be here too. Yeah,
good.
Well, I remember when I met her, it was through Cash Money. I met her at Cash Money was doing a gig in London. And I knew him, so he's like, hey, you want to meet my agent? I'm thinking some dude from Philly with a chain.
Yeah, I was like,
no, I don't. And then she came in. I was like, oh, wow, hell no.
And y'all just clicked.
Yeah, 10 years of marriage last month.
That's right.
Yeah,
congratulations, man. That's a beautiful thing.
It is. And you know what I always thought is cool is we were just having my boy in there playing around with the Moog thing on his app.
Yeah.
And you have a boy the same age. Mm-hmm. The way they kind of see and feel music, isn't it amazing for being, I guess, the dads checking that out?
Yep. That's a trip. I mean, even saying he plays baseball, soccer, basketball, and he's very, very competitive. And just already seeing him in that, and just like your son just did when you start doing the Move on the app. He's like, Move, Dad, let me
get up on that.
Yeah, it's all they want to be the lead of everything. And you know, that's a beautiful thing, seeing him develop into decision making, choices of this one or that one. You know, all that stuff. You know,
it's also cool to see how they appreciate music.
No question.
Because you know, I mean, I guess at that age, you're saying like, you know, when they're age, just want to hit shit. Like we're going in and playing the drums and stuff. He loves like Rage Against the Machine, but I play a lot of different stuff to him. And the one thing that will stop him in his tracks is the song Blue Monk by Thelonious Monk. He'll just stop because I don't know what it was. Maybe when he was in the womb or something. Because we played a lot of different stuff, man.
What attracts him? I mean, I guess that's how all music and things do to all of us. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
So. You can never really say. That's the thing. That's why I always find music still. You know, it's my life and all that.
Yeah, no question.
But it does something that transcends everything about humanity. It just makes it all one thing. You know, humans are all just humans when you listen to music.
Facts.
It's not like all this different stuff. Yeah. So, but let's get back to it because I know that we got you on a Saturday afternoon kind of doing that thing. But we're at a really cool point where when it all, the question was when we were talking about what beat you first made and all that stuff, but when did it all click for you when you were kind of like, you know, when you heard yourself make something that you were like, all right, this is going to be what I'm going to do for the rest of my life?
Definitely when we did Words I Manifest, because it was the first single that we released together, me and Guru, and when it came out, it was a hit, and it just took off, and everything just started to fall into place from that point. So it was like, wow, we're on our way, and my mind state, which it still is, keep making records that have that effect like that, you know, all the time.
Are you your worst enemy when it comes to stuff like that? You're your biggest critic?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah. I know when it's ready. You know, some people, they know when it's ready for them, and I may disagree when I hear it, but for me, I know when it's ready.
It seems like there are a lot of, I guess there are a lot of musicians like that would take, that don't have the I'm finished button. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They'll go for like 2-3 years making a beat or making an album. I know a lot of guys that are still making an album. It's been like 6 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that problem?
Oh, like, yeah, I'm on a 15-year
run. Not 15-year run, but definitely a 12-year run with the NYGs, and now I'm actually mixing it.
Yeah.
There were different things.
That's good
that,
to know.
There were different things that stopped and started, and many things. But the crazy thing is right when I was about to get into the full mixing mode of it, is really around the same time that I found out we were going to pack up and move. So now it's like, man, I can't even think about albums or anything right now. I got to think about where we're going to go.
Where so you got this, how long have you been here then?
This is going on my third year.
All right, so you're settled now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's all kind
of
like,
so a lot of adjustments had to be made. I had to do new business decisions, new different things. I had personal issues going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it was all just, it was like, am I being tested on if I'm going to fall apart?
I refuse to fall apart.
Yeah. I refuse. So I was like, man, stay believing that everything's going to work itself out. And I just went into that mode. And now that I'm in a space where I can really focus on that album, being this album, they're all sacred to me, but this one's special because of my friendship with the guys in the group, because I known them when they were, you know, out in the street, you know, doing what they do. So now that they're home and everybody's focused, they're older, but their music can relate to the youngsters that's in the street, and they're really
See,
out
that's,
there.
That's the trick, right?
Yeah. I call it struggle music. We make struggle music to let cats know we know what time it is. We still keep it hood. Even though we're mature and intellectual, we still keep it hood as far as understanding the mentality of our people. And if it transcends to everybody else outside of that, that's fine, because it's supposed to speak to everybody, but it's specifically designed to a certain audience. And when it comes to the streets, I love that type of music. I love that type of lingo and language, because I did the same thing. I was a slang kid, still speak slang, still, you know, just do a lot of stuff that is part of my world and my culture, but... And then I do the mature stuff too, you know, so it's a nice balance.
Now, did you ever have an idea to have your studio where you live? Like in your house? Or
never.
Because I have never thought that either. But
I'll be too lazy.
Well, we're talking about Q-Tip, Jonathan, it is in his basement, right,
pretty much. I'll be too lazy and I won't want to work. Yeah. I want to sit on the couch, watch TV, light one, you know, have a beer, and, you know, have something to eat and just lay there, probably take a power nap, get back up, I'll do it tomorrow. Next thing you know, you're laying on the couch for days, never getting it done. Yeah. I like to have to get up knowing I got to come to work, handle my mission, get to go back home, you know, like, stay moving.
We have a house in out the back where there used to be the stables.
Right.
We converted it into the studio, so I have to leave the house.
That's not where you're, it's like,
yeah, it's not like, house. It's not like, yeah.
You have to go out.
I have
out
to leave,
to it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We call it the Mannix.
That's different.
Yeah, that's
different.
The Mannix. Yeah.
That's different.
And it's funny because my boy's always kind of sneaking in, picking up guitars and bringing them back to his house.
Right.
Go back to the house. And stuff.
Yeah, but that's different. You, it's not like, oh, let me just go downstairs and we're there.
Yeah.
You got to leave out of the house where you're in a whole separate thing from the house.
Because you look forward to different parts of your day at that point. It's not just all one blur and stuff. Now, we were talking about stuff just in the other room about, we talked about the record you have out with 8.
Uh-huh.
There was another lady who attained the record came out yesterday.
Tori Wolf.
Yeah, she dropped her third single, actually. I did the first two. The first one was called First, and then we did a remix with Dilated Peoples because the original, I'm scratching their voice in the hook.
Yeah.
So I was like, yo, we should do a remix and have them rap in the song.
That'd be great.
And it came out dope. We did a video for both versions, the remix and the original. And then we dropped one called Shadows Crawl. And now this one is produced by King of Chill, who's a legendary producer from MC Light, Audio 2,
The Alliance. Oh, that dude. Yeah.
We go way back to the 80s.
That's like Staten Island, right?
Yeah.
Staten Island,
Brooklyn, but you know.
Yeah.
But Staten Island was where Nat Robinson and the whole First Priority move from Brooklyn to Staten Island. That's Milk D's father and Giz's father. Yeah.
I knew those guys. Yeah.
So from there, King of Chill produced it. I did the track. King of Chill produced it. I did the scratches. Mm-hmm. And Macklemore came and spit a dope verse on it. And it's called Free, and it just came out yesterday, meaning August 11th.
Right. That's cool. I mean, it's one of those things where, I guess when you're kind of, I guess what is it, contracted to make a beat when someone comes sits in the studio with you and like that, it's going to be one kind of thing. When you start doing stuff where people come to your studio, how's the dynamic change there? Is it kind of like, I mean, I imagine people are a little bit nervous in a studio with you, right? Going, okay, we're trying to do some stuff.
I mean, most of the time they're more excited to get it cracking, and I just tell them what I visualize, you know, how I work, and then I'm like, hey, if you want to go lamp in the lounge on TV, and then, you know, a lot of them like, I want to watch you cook it, okay?
Yeah.
And I kind of just
here's me quantizing a beat.
I tell them, don't really pay me no mind if I don't they answer you or whatever, and I'll just start going to my little world, and then. When you just hear something and you start. Now,
you point over there and I can see over your shoulder there's like a controller keyboard, there's an Akai sampler, there's a laptop, and some records behind it. Now, is that like what you're working on now?
No, that stack of records was just stuff that sometimes you just pull stuff out of a box. Some of them might have drum breaks or whatever, but. Mm-hmm. That's when I actually had to do a vinyl only party in Toronto, and I went to Rock and Soul and bought a whole bunch of vinyl. And the instead of putting them doubles in it in one jacket, I put them in one jacket.
Right.
So a lot of that stack is just empty jackets of those records I bought, because I didn't have time to really go through all my boxes because I've been on Serato for so long doing a vinyl party. Like, well, I got to rip it. And there's certain records I'm going to need that I don't know where to really look, because everything's in storage. So I was like, yo, let me buy a couple, and then I'll look for the one that I know. There's certain cases that are still packed the same way, even from when Becky
was. Oh, yeah, so you remember how they're packed. See, that's the thing. You used to have, like, I guess, like a sticker on your case to know what case that was or whatever it corresponds.
Yeah, we all mark our stuff. The DJs always have, we know our bags.
I also remember Serato. Serato, I remember Becky was talking about Jeff did Serato.
Right.
And she's like, I was like, what's about the Serato? She said, when Primo does Serato, Serato's going to be Serato. Because, I mean, Jeff.
Right. I kept saying no.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Now, what was the thing that got you to go, all right, dude, was it Jeff?
Jeff and DJ Jazz.
Well, for those who don't know, Serato is a program that runs an interface from your iTunes, right? Your iTunes to the turntables on a Technics through the mixer, right?
Yep. So now instead of having 300 songs, you have 30,000 songs.
So your set is, you know, that it's your spoiled for choice.
I
imagine your iTunes is pretty much awesome.
Yep.
So you're out there, you got like 40,000 songs. How do you shift a set? Like if you go out to a club?
Once I know what kind of gig it is, is how I set it up. Because I'm like, what kind of gig is it? Is it Hot 97 style or is it like raw underground?
Yeah.
If they're like, well, it's a little mixture of both, kind of like, you know, club dance and all. All right, cool, got it. I'll start pulling. I'll get the latest stuff that's on the radio as a folder. I'll get the classics as a folder. And just in between stuff. I even have a sing-along folder, records I know they know the words, and I can just drop the fader and they finish it and stuff like that. It just changes all the time. Yeah. And that's the fun of it, going, wait to look what I can do today. And you got enough records to do different stuff to keep altering your show.
I'm thinking, like, back in the day when you were taking six record boxes out, you had to think way before, like, you know, what could possibly be the most far afield gig I'd do, and kind of accommodate for that.
Yeah.
So now it's almost the opposite, where you're like, okay, I've got all this choice rather than limited choice.
But but when you have a lot, that's also can be bad, because you run amok.
Exactly. Like, what was the name of that song again?
There's so much to choose from, but you just got to be creative, man. And that's always been a DJ thing, being creative. Yeah. I mean, even the way we mark our records with the tape and coloring with markers, we're very, very meticulous.
Yeah, I remember, what was it, that recent TV show about the Bronx, was that thing that came out on Netflix or whatever. It was corny. A lot of people liked it, but it was like Grandmaster Flash was
the Get Down.
Thing about the crayon and a record, it was like this big mystery for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Well, things like that, I guess, I mean, those, that's the folklore of the instrument, right?
No,
I mean, it's like when you talk about like blues guitar, it started a certain place and it moved, you know, along. But that kind of stuff I always found really cool, interesting. I also kind of like what equipment people use. Mm. Like, I was always one of those dudes that was like, what amp is he using through that?
Yeah,
or what keyboard is that sound? Like, what are you using? I see an Akai and...
Yeah, and my amp, we use a Bryson 4B.
Yeah.
Very, very respected machinery, you know, and... you know, we routed that in the back because this place was already pre-done. The speakers were already.
Oh, really? So this was like the studio, right?
Yeah, we just took it out and brought my stuff in, and you know, the carpet was very lumpy and everything. So I just got my carpet guy just come and just tighten it up, and just recut and tighten it and pull it, and then it's back to tight again.
Yeah, it's a great studio. So what stuff are you like? Because if that's your
Akai Renaissance is the. The software version of an MPC. It is an MPC.
Yeah.
Renaissance.
Because that's the, you have the old one up there with
The 60. So. That's a 62. I have a 60 as well, and I still use it. That's all the NYG's stuff to finish the album. The album's all floppy disks, so back to that era.
Floppy disk, man.
Everything else is done on here. They have a couple songs I did on here, like it's the newer stuff. That's but to close out the album, maybe three songs, but the rest of it's all floppy disk. Yeah. And then this right here is my new baby. I love it. It's quicker than using the old way. Because it's, you know, it's everything.
It's a little more sensitive, and it's digital too, right?
Yeah, you can just jump to here, and look, you mess up, you can undo. Even if I mess up on the program, and I can hit undo, and it puts it back to where I had it. Yeah, you know, it's just crazy how you couldn't do that in my era. Same thing with going to tape. All we know is tape. We don't know Pro Tools. So.
That's the thing. I remember when the Pro Tools switch happened, right?
Yeah.
And also, it changes the way you track, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because if you're looking at tape, and especially if you're looking at old school style, where you're in a studio, you're paying $1,000 a day, right? You got tape. You got to keep your mistakes to a minimum.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
What you put on the tape has to be good or great.
You miss
a
punch, it's gone. You got to do it again. And the more you keep missing the punch, the harder it is to clean it up. Where with this, you can just hit undo, and you're back to normal.
Do you think that makes it easier for ideas to get down? Because, I mean, a lot. If you think about putting it on tape or putting it on digital format, right, the pressure you'd be under, like, say, if you keep missing that punch, it's just going to get messier.
It's easier when you already know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, I already know what I'm doing, and I'm like, oh, it could do this and this, that quick. Oh, and it could do that? Mm-hmm. Cool. Show me how to make it do that. Because when you show me how to make it do that, I'm thinking in the way of how I want to interpret a track on how I've been doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, oh, that's even faster. Cool, done. And it is much faster. Much faster.
Well, I should check that out, man. I see everybody's got the Planet Fat. I have one of those. Everybody I know has
that's
one.
That's all my analog gear from the other studio. I will always keep that and use those.
See, a lot of times.
Rack mount.
Like, dude, we were talking about Tim Latham before, man. He was back in the day, because we produced those records with him, right?
Right.
And he was always saying, like, like a lot of these plug-in stuff, because he's really into Pro Tools, right?
Right.
Sometimes you just got to put a mic in front of a speaker, and just that air that gets picked up is the thing. It's also, I guess, a lot of times people, I guess the waveform, I guess someone's awake, but the waveform usually is like real boxy when they have like the digital stuff, and then you have more dynamic, and I guess with that comes a little bit more, you can cut through with certain frequencies, right?
Yeah, no question.
But anyway, to leave this, because I hear my baby girl just woke up here too. Do you have like a memory of a beat that was just really hard to put together, that was just arduous, but then when you finished it, you were like, well, that was what the struggle was about, just trying to get that idea out?
Not really. I mean, I get stuck where, like, you know, producer's block, where I've hit a song 3, 4, 5 times and still not coming together, and then one day it just finally comes together and it's on, you know. It rarely happens, but I've been down that road a couple of, you know, at least 5, 6, 7 times.
Yeah,
and take weeks where I'm still can't get it to go. Different grooves, different sounds, and it's still not where I'm like, yeah, this is the one. It has to hit me that way for me to go, yeah. Even if they feel it, nah, this is it. I'm just that confident to know that my judgment has not teeter-tottered at all.
No teeter-totter, man.
From my childhood to 51, it's still... Yes, right. And a lot of it has a DJ mentality because we have to set the tone of what's hot.
Yeah.
And we set the tone without having to say it's hot just because everybody else says it is. It's because it's not hot just because, to me, just because everybody else says it's a hot record.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hot records I don't like right now that's running things, but I have it in my Serato.
Yeah.
You got to.
Yeah.
I don't want nobody going, you don't have that. You're DJing a club with this type of a crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it comes down to you trust yourself as a musician.
Absolutely.
Right? Now, when did that happen? That happened early on in your life? Because I know that I trust myself as a person because when I was like 17, I had to jump out of airplanes and
right,
shit. And
right.
It was like, well, I had to trust me or I'd die.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you in a situation like that where it was like heavy, where you're like, I have to trust this dude?
Yeah, it's to where I've been given an opportunity to do this professionally and make money and live off of it and all the perks that come with it. I'm gonna go in as a fan, so I have a fan mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, man, if you gave me a shot at making a record, this is how I would do it, and that's pretty much the way I go in. Like, this is how I would do it, and you give me a shot, listen after the next hour what it sounds like.
Well, that's inspiring, dude.
Yeah.
I appreciate you taking the time on a Saturday afternoon for you.
Yep,
love you, man.
Brother,
thank you very much. And now we're gonna go. You're gonna meet my daughter now. Was I right or was I right? It was awesome to hang with Primo again. He's a gentleman and a legend, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I know my wife showed up with the kids towards the end there, and then after we finished, he hung out with us. But he's an awesome dude. He took pictures with my family. I got some awesome pictures. And his son's about the same as my son, so there's a lot of great stuff going on. So switching gears a little bit, or rather a lot of bit, because, you know, life's like that, you know. I'm talking with Big Phil Campion next week. Now, he's an SAS vet. He's super trooper, man. He's a guy who once threw a fridge full of Coca-Cola to fend off Somali pirates. This guy's got more stories than Edgar Allan Poe. But more than a big personality and the wild stories, he is a guy behind the Remembrance Rumble. It's an annual boxing match between UK and US Special Forces guys raising money to support veterans. Awesome cause. So, don't miss the next episode, and be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Until next time, y'all, stay classy.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.